This is the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the World Championships on the Big Island.
Welcome onto this edition of the Kona Edge. My name is Brad Brown. It's good to be with you. And thank you so much for downloading and listening to this podcast. You might be wondering, Brad, where the heck have you been? Well, man alive, have I got a story to tell you. It's been a crazy few months, if I have to be honest, and I'm going to spare you all the gory details, but it's been challenging, to say the least. If you are a long-time listener of the podcast, you'll know that I've had a few challenges from an employment perspective, and the Kona Edge is a bit of a hobby. It doesn't necessarily pay its way yet. I put a lot of work and effort and time into it, so unfortunately, when things do go a bit pear-shaped, this is one of the first things that has to take a back seat. But as it stands right now, and like I said, if you've been following the podcast for a while, you'll know that I've been having one or two issues from an employment perspective. And I've got 20 years in radio, a 20-year background in radio. I've been an on-air presenter on various radio stations in South Africa. I've literally worked for all the biggest and all the best, both regionally and nationally. And up until very recently, was working on The Breakfast Show on the only talk radio station, English talk radio station in South Africa. So as far as from the outside is concerned, you'd say it's a pretty successful radio career, and I've had a good run. Don't get me wrong, I've absolutely loved it. But over the last few months, the organization that I work for is the National Broadcaster here in South Africa. It's a parastatal. And if you follow the news, if you are South African, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. But if you'll follow the news about South Africa, we've had some major, major corruption issues over the last few years as far as what's going on in government and within the parastatal. So we've got a few. There's a company that does all our power. There's massive corruption there. Company that does all our sort of rail transport. There's big issues there. And the National Broadcaster, which is the SABC, kind of like the BBC if you're British, if you'd like. And there've been some major, major corruption issues. And it's been pretty tough. We've been, from an employment perspective, not sure from month to month if we're going to get paid or not. The last couple of years, we haven't had increases. And there's been a lot of tension and a lot of sort of nervousness, not knowing about our future. And we had contract negotiations. I'm not going to go into all the details, but there were some big issues in our latest contract negotiations. People were moved. People were let go with absolutely no consultation. I was one of the people that got moved and literally had my income cut in half, but my hours doubled. So yeah, absolutely ridiculous situation. And after a couple of months of trying to get meetings with line management, virtually impossible, finally got hold of someone, had a meeting, put my grievances down and didn't hear another word back. And I just decided for my own mental health, I need to get out. So at the end of June, I tendered my resignation, and that was it. I don't have another job. I'm going it alone. So the pressure is on. I need to make this work, and hopefully you're along for the ride. It's going to be a tough few months, I'm sure. But yeah, where there's a will, there's a way. I'm pretty tenacious, and I don't give up pretty easily. So yeah, I have to make it happen. I've got a wife and three kids and a roof to keep over our heads. So that's where we stand right now. As it stands right now, I am full-time podcaster, come digital marketer, come online tribe builder. So yeah, that's where we're at. And fingers crossed, if you can send positive vibes my way, I'm going to need all the help I can get. So that's where we are at the moment. And just to let you know, I mean, how crazy is this? So I resigned. It's as it stands now, it's just over 2 weeks ago since I resigned. I tendered my resignation to my entire line management. To date, I still have not had one of them reach out to me to ask me why I'm resigning. I mean, that just says everything about the organization and the culture of management within the organization. And you know what? Good riddance. So that's it. I'm done with formal employment. I am now working for myself. And outside of the Kona Edge, I have a couple of other platforms that I own and I'm in partnership with. So over the coming weeks and months, we're going to be doing a whole bunch of stuff. And I think there's a lot of synergy between some of those, as well as the Kona Edge. And you'll be hearing more about it here on the podcast. And yeah, I'd love it if you'd support our business. It's what we do, and it's what we're going to need to do to pay the bills. So if there's something, or if we're offering something that you think is worthwhile, we'd love it if you wouldn't consider supporting us. So that's it for me. Enough about me yakking. It's good to be back, and I'm committing to getting this podcast up and running exactly the way it was. I've got a bit of extra time now. And I've got to be sensible with that time, but I think there is definitely a future for what we're doing here at the Kona Edge, and hopefully you're a part of it. So this, hopefully, is going to be the first of many, many podcasts to come. And today, I touch base with an athlete who's done some amazing things. He lives in Hong Kong, but he's actually from Denmark, and he's got a pretty cool story to share as well. I'm talking about Jacob Wissem. So thank you once again for listening, and we'll catch up again tomorrow. Enjoy my chat with Jacob. Jacob, welcome onto the Kona Edge. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much, Brad. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on board.
Jacob, you're living in Hong Kong, but you originally from Denmark. What took you out east?
It was work. I got an opportunity to move from Denmark to Singapore. As many expats out here, it was on a 12 month contract, and now it doesn't have an end. So let's see if I ever go back. It's a good life out here. It's busy, but I enjoy the warm weather and different cultures and all that.
Tell me about work. What is it that you do for a living?
Right now I'm a consultant for, you know, some regulatory compliance. So pretty busy day. but we assist banks, hedge funds with all their legal issues. So it's interesting.
And triathlon, where did that start for you? I mean, is this something that started in the East, or did it start back home in Denmark?
It actually started back home in Denmark. It was, I think it's some of the classic story. I was maybe a bit drunk on a bar, and together with some friends I played soccer with, and they were talking about that they have signed up to this Ironman Nice, which was, you know, around 7 months ahead. And they have all done an Ironman before. And around 3 months before, I saw Ironman in Copenhagen, and I was pretty impressed with these guys. So when they tried to say, "Oh, Jacob, you need to try this out," I don't know if it was the alcohol, but it was definitely a yes for me. So the next day, yeah, I registered for Ironman in Nice, which was my first triathlon. At that time, I couldn't swim, so that was definitely a lot of work ahead of me. I have never, you know, done any cycling or running specific, but I've always done sport, high level. So overall, my fitness was pretty well.
When you woke up the next morning after that night out, tell me what was going through your head.
Yeah, I don't know. I was, you know, first of all, I talked to my, I had a colleague in my previous work, that said, you know, Ironman Nice is definitely not the easiest one. Both the swim is like a mass start, and it's a hilly bike course, and it's super hot. But I've kind of promised the guys to do it. So I signed up, and then that was kind of my journey. And for me, it was all about learning to swim. You know, the next day I went down to the local pool, and I couldn't crawl 10 meters or 25 meters without almost drowning. So it was an interesting 7 months where I joined a swim squad to learn that. And then my coach was Google. So I was just, around, you know, different training plans. And then I joined the guys that, you know, my friends that did the race, but it was just, it was just played by the ear. And then I tried it out, and it went pretty well, I would say. It was a decent result, 10 hours and 30 minutes, which I think is okay on that course. But I think it was crossing that finish line that really got me hooked. I've never tried anything like that. All the emotions. And when I saw my wife and my mom and dad, you know, I just start to cry. I don't know why, but it was a mix of, you know, all the sacrifice I've done through the 7 months and the whole thing you kind of go through a full Ironman. You know, how many times you say, I quit. And then you reach the finish line and spectators and everything. It was really, really, it was the real deal.
Were you one of those guys after that first one that said, I'm never doing that again? Or were you straight after you finished said, when can I do another one?
Well, I think the days after I couldn't walk and just, you know, I guess we can say that I forgot to put, you know, the cream you put on the, you know, the parts. So I had really some painful moments the days after. But I took it kind of easy after, and it was actually first, you know, a couple of months after where a good friend of mine, he's run a marathon where he used a young Danish athlete as coach, and he was starting to coach triathlon also. He was one of the best Danish age groupers. And we had a good talk, the three of us, and then he started to kind of coach us, and we did, you know, the following year we did the 70.3 in Mallorca, which was the kind of the first race where I had structured training, and I could really, really feel the difference. And it went also very well. And then I was kind of hooked into that sport. But I would say it kicked off when I got the call to go to Asia. Moved to Singapore, and I got connected to a triathlon team in Singapore. And I think from there, you know, I've not looked back. It's definitely a big part of my life. And I would say training has done well. You know, I've started to win races in Asia. And I think in 2015, I did Ironman in Japan. Where I won the overall age group and got the ticket to Kona 6 weeks after or something in 2015. So that was my first try on the island.
But before we get on to racing in Kona, you mentioned you came, I mean, you were new to the sport of triathlon, but you had a bit of a sporting background. What was that background? What were you into before you got into triathlon?
Yeah, it kind of been all over, right? So it started with table tennis to basketball to football, but it's kind of been, sport has been my life. I've always done something, you know, if I wasn't playing tennis, I was playing squash, or I was in the gym. So I'm kind of always having this thing about doing something. If I didn't do anything, I didn't feel well. So I've always kind of done it and come natural to me, so I've always kind of done it at a pretty high level. When I started that company that made me move to Singapore, it was a company called Saxo. They did sponsor a pro team in cycling. So when I started there, it was kind of, you know, you just start and you almost went out, bought a bike, and then you start cycling. So I kind of got a lot of cycling from that. We went down with some training camps with the pro team, so we could kind of see how that worked and how they were doing their nutrition, how they're doing the training, and you could really see how much they suffer, these guys. So that was kind of my first step into triathlon. I didn't know that I want to do the triathlon way at that point, but it kind of got me a little step ahead on the cycling part. But I haven't done anything, you know, related. I haven't done, as I mentioned, no swimming and no running.
You mentioned that race in Japan where you managed to get the slot for Kona. Was Kona on the sort of, was it in your mind, or was it a case of, hey, we've won this race, here's an opportunity for you to go and race at Kona, and you took it? Were you thinking you wanted to go to Kona before then?
Well, before that, you know, I had a very good season that in 2015. I won Challenge Philippines, my age group. I won Ironman Malaysia 70.3. So already during that year, I could see that in my age group around Asia, I could see I was potentially one of the strongest one. Japan was a very, very tough race. It was super, super hilly on the bike, which favored me because I could see the bike. I did have some talent on the bike. So I, you know, if you ask my teammates, they were pretty sure I could get a slot. But I had a dream that it could be that year. And it turned out to go well, I would say.
Tell me about that first Kona experience. You mentioned your first Ironman experience in Nice finishing, but there's something special about racing in Hawaii.
Yeah. I think I know. I said I get hooked on the first Ironman, but I think when you go to Kona the first time, you get sucked into this whole triathlon community. I remember the first day when I arrived, and I just looked out at the Ali Drive, and I just saw all these super super fit people, you know, fat percentages of nothing, and they were running. I don't know what tempo. Definitely a tempo I couldn't run. But it was really, really an amazing experience. One thing is that my family really loved Hawaii also, but you had all your friends there, and it was all about just, you know, enjoying the moment. And then the race itself for me, you know, it went super well. But it was, you know, crossing that finish line was even bigger than the first Ironman, I would say. I think it changed definitely my life again for the second time, and I got even more hooked.
Tell me about that first Kona experience, having qualified and coming, as you say, you'd been doing pretty well in Asia, age group wise, and you knew you were pretty good, but now all of a sudden, like you say, you arrive in Kona and there's the best of the best, and for someone like you to look around and almost feel a bit intimidated by the bodies that are running around. How do you approach that race? Do you go in there thinking, you know what, I'm going to give it my best if it's good enough on the day? Or do you go in there thinking, you know what, I'm good enough to win this thing. Let's go as hard as we can and see what happens.
No. I had my coach, and he had done Hawaii a couple of times. He's been on the podium. He's, you know, he was also very realistic. You know, that was, you know, at that time I didn't have what it takes to be on in the top five or anything in the podium. I was, as mentioned, my swimming was very weak. I don't know what, you know, I think, I know it doesn't sound, but I think it was 1:15. I don't know how many, I was maybe number 1,000 or something after the swim. But then, you know, my bike, I think it was 4:45, which at that time, I think was the fourth or fifth fastest bike split, which kind of got me up the field. And then for me, you know, the run was just so, so hard. So there was just suffering. But back to your question, no, I didn't believe that I could win at all. But it was just the experience for me that I was looking for. I'm super, super competitive. So I will always give myself 110%. And then let's see how far it goes. But having a coach again is good, right? Because he told me on how to approach things with the experience that he has, to kind of keep me in line. And also with the whole training in racing week, just keep it simple, where you see a lot of people, they go up and train way too hard in the final days. But, no, I didn't expect anything, but I had an extremely good experience and a big motivation to come back and do even better.
Jacob, tell me, you mentioned at that time you were realistic and you knew you didn't have what it took then to get onto the podium. Over time, obviously, you get better. But you mentioned that competitive spirit, and we know that you can train to get better. But that competitiveness, to be competitive as an age group on the world stage, is that something you can develop over time, or is it something you have to have?
I think you need to have it in some way. I think you need to have it in training, because there's a lot of, it's a mental game to keep pushing yourself to make the sacrifices. So you need to be competitive if you want to really, really perform at that level. Because to be honest, sometimes what, you know, now I talk as an age grouper, meaning an age grouper with a hard job, family, babies and all that. Sometimes you're up against people who potentially want to go pro. So they have taken a 1 year or 2 years off and they're doing 30 hours, 25 hours per day. And it's pretty hard to compete against unless you are structured with your coach, but also that you are ready to suffer in training. And with that is also being competitive. And I think if you're not competitive, you can simply not go the whole line. You need to have that in your, if you can create it, I think maybe potentially if you get good results or you have good teammates around you, you can maybe develop it down the line, but I think it needs to be something that lies deep within you. That's something that starts when you're very young.
Where did your competitive streak come from?
Well, I think, as I mentioned, for me, it started when I started playing soccer when I was 5 years old. I also want to win. You know, my mom always took you know, this story about when I was 5 years old. And every time the guys we played against scored a goal, I would lie down on the grass and cry. And I think it's something about, you know, me losing. I hate losing. So, and that's something that followed me all the way through.
Let's talk about dealing with that, because I'm guessing not everything's always gone your way in triathlon. How do you deal with disappointments?
Not very well. I would say in 2014, I did Ironman Copenhagen. I DNF with a crash. I moved to Singapore. I did Ironman Malaysia 5 weeks after. I was leading the bike, and then I had a double flat at the same time, 8 kilometers from T2. So it was a DNF again. I think that was not, you know, for me, that was a big downer, because I could see that I potentially could have qualified for Kona at that race. But I think there's a lot of ups and downs during the year with, I'm very lucky, you know, I'm not that injured. But I think the guys who get injuries, they face it. But again, it's back to having a coach, that can kind of guide you through the way, that if you're injured, well, then we focus on something else. If you are sick and you think it's the most important of the final block, you know, well, then you'll get the rest and you're potentially more rested than the other guys. So I think what you need is guidance to go through those periods.
Jacob, talk to me about the juggle of managing time. That's probably, in my experience, the questions that I get asked the most here from ordinary everyday age groupers is how do people balance work, family life, wife, children, and being competitive in a sport like triathlon? Because it's not just one sport you have to train for. You're training for three.
Yeah. And that's definitely also my struggle. I'm a very low volume athlete, 100%, because I simply don't have the time. If you take my 2017, I had more than 110 overseas travel days. So for that to kind of go up and you want to be competitive is get making a good plan with your coach, have a coach that maybe micromanage you. And then for me, I've listened to many of your podcasts and all that. You know, I'm 80% hard and maybe 20% easy stuff, because I don't have the luxury to do easy stuff. So most of my bikes and runs are in the high scale. And then I do have some easy rides in the weekends if I'm lucky, maybe in off season. So for me, it's having a very structured plan. It's having a buy-in from the family. So my baby girl, she wakes up at 7 a.m. So I've done all my training before 7 a.m. every day. And then I have family time, and then I have evening things, right? So I structure it around my family, which is first priority, and then it's work, and then it's the sport. But everyone around me also knows that if I can't do my sports, I'm maybe not that person that they kind of like to be around. So I think it is the tough part to figure out how to do this. For me, it works with a good coach, and it works for me because I am willing to put in the hard effort when I need to. And that's a lot of the, you know, mental strength that you need to have to go through this. And I'm super jealous of the people who can put in 15 to 20 hours per week. And I wish I had the time, because I'm sure it would sometimes be more pleasant with some of the easy runs and easy bike rides. Definitely could be better, and if I had time to more sleep, I would be better. But you have to structure it around how you can do it, and then just accept it. So for me, during the year, you know, I'm low volume, and then when similar right now, I have 4 or 5 weeks to Ironman Canes, And we really built it up now. And I know that it's hard for me to go through the day because I have longer sessions, especially in the weekend, but also doing the, you know, doing the weekdays. But for me, it's the final block, 4 or 5 weeks, and then I'm back to normal after that. So I think it's all about structuring your day, except that you can't always do like the other guys. And then again, back to having a good coach. I think that is the absolute key.
I think you make an important point then. And I was going to ask you that question, but you answered it where you said you wish you had extra time and you think that if you could train extra hours, you would be better. Some athletes, and you've got to deal with what you've been dealt with. And some athletes, yes, they would perform better. Do you think that, I mean, obviously you like the structure and it works for you, but do you think if you had an extra 10 hours to train a week, it would make that much more of a difference to what you're doing now?
Yeah, I think so. I think if you have the graph about number of hours and then your performance, then I think, yes, if I have another 10 hours and if that means that I could also potentially get more sleep, then I could be on another level. I think that's, yeah, I think if you train a lot, you can get to one level. But to get more than that, it needs to be structured. You need to have mental strength. You need to suffer. For me, it's just that there's a lot of weeks where I don't have that time. That 10 hours would be great for me, especially for the swim, you know, because I'm still struggling on the swim. I'm so far behind. Then I'm lucky I can keep it up and catch everyone on the bike. But for me, if I could have 5 hours more swimming per week, it would mean a lot for me.
You've mentioned the word suffer a few times. I personally, yeah. I love hanging out in dark places. I'm a huge fan of ultra marathons for that reason. What does the word suffering mean to you? Talk to me about that part of it, because I think a lot of people don't sort of realize that is a huge part in being successful in this sport. Everyone hurts. It's what you do when you're hurting that matters.
Yeah, 100%. Well, I think it's a hard thing to explain, but you know, again, back to most of my session is where I'm in that dark place. I'm where my legs are screaming stop, but I just keep on pushing. And for me, you know, it's a goal that's potentially where I am right now. I'm now in the final block. It's all the work I've done in off season with a lot of strength training, and then the whole build up where I really, really focused on high power on the bike. So all that is a kind of accumulation where I'm now, where I can see I can even push more power for a longer time than I did last year, which is for me, you know, that's the success. Now I of course have to execute on race day, but that suffering that I do, meaning I will go in and I will really, really hurt in my training. And yeah, I think it's a little bit hard to explain what is suffering, but I think it's when you really push yourself out the limit where you can't, because you it's the mental thing that stops you. And then you have tried it a million of times. When you go into a workout, you're saying, no, I can't. And when you are in the workout, you say, okay, I'm going to quit. But then suddenly you only have maybe 5 minutes left of the intervals. And when you're done after the five, you're just saying, wow, I did it. Meaning that I do almost in all my sessions.
Talk to me about the role of your coach. You've also mentioned your coach a few times and having that structure and how important it has been for you. What's important for you in looking for a coach? What do you look for?
So I had, now I have, I still have the same coach who's a very good friend of mine, now. He's a very different coach from many. He's very micromanaged. He's not giving you, you know, the same thing as all the other athletes. He's very, very aware of how your day is and how you are as a person. Because I think the training plan that I'm doing, there's a lot of people who will not be able to do it and they will not be successful. But my coach know how I train, how I feel, and how my body respond. And I think that is the coach you should look for. There's a lot of people, they get a coach and they get a, you know, complete standard program, which I think is super dangerous, because, you know, if suddenly there's something happens in your life and you can't do it, but you still so stubborn, so you don't want all the reds in Training Peaks or something like that, then you go out to go do the session, and that's either if you're simply having too much work or too much stressful in the family or anything, then you'll get injured or you'll get sick. So my coach, we talk every weekend, where I explain this is the week coming, I'm traveling on these days, or I can do training these days. Then he will adjust the program, and if there's something happens during the week, then he will go in and adjust it a second time. So for me, being micromanaged by my coach in that way, it's really something that works for me, and I think that's what people should look for. Not saying if it's in your first year, then I think it's just getting, you know, someone to give you a program, and then you want to follow that, and then you will get better. But at some point, you would need that, you know, extra, you know, customization or something, or what you call it.
Yeah.
But that's super important for me, and I think that's a good coach, in my view.
Yeah, I think you make an important point. I mean, you talk about the generic sort of programs that people pick up, and you can get them on the internet. We've got them on our site. And some structure is better than no structure. That's my first thing.
100%.
But I agree with you that a customized coach who takes into account your lifestyle, and you've mentioned sleep as a big one. I don't think athletes sort of realize the importance of sleep. I mean, we talk about rest, but sleep in itself, getting a good night's sleep, if you don't, you can feel it the next day in your training, and you're not going to be able to turn yourself inside out if you need to. I say if you need to, if that's the session, you need to go as hard as you can. If you've had a good, a bad night's sleep, you're not going to be able to do that session and hit those numbers that you need to hit.
No, agree. Agree. And then if you look at me, I'm one of the athletes that definitely doesn't get enough sleep. Again, back to how you structure a day, I need to be done by 7 a.m. if I want to spend some time with my baby girl in the morning. So, you know, I'm up 5 a.m. almost every day. And I can tell you, because I also need time with my wife in the evening, I'm not in bed before 11:30, right? So you can kind of do the numbers that I am definitely lack of sleep. I think my body, and I think I can manage with less sleep than many. I have friends, you know, if they don't get the 8 hours, they're done. But again, back to, you know, how could I improve? Well, if I had more time, I would sleep more. I think it's, as you say, it's essential to recovery and all that stuff. And it's definitely something that you need to be focused on. And sometimes if you feel very, very tired, then it's definitely worth having a sleep in versus going up very early and train. The problem for me is that then I wouldn't do any training. And then I'm pretty sure I wouldn't be where I am today if I was following that approach.
Absolutely. Jacob, what are you most proud of in your triathlon career?
I think I'm very proud of my corner performance in 2017. It's back to my 2017 with more than 110 traveling days. I still managed to get third in my age group, 35, 39. 1 and 2 also got 1 and 2 overall. So it was a really annoying age group. But my bike split, 4 hours and 35, which was the fastest bike split, 6 minutes down to number 2. I think that's something I'm super proud of. Again, also back to, you know, it's pretty cool with the number of hours I do that my coach and I can make that happen. So I'm definitely super proud of.
I mean, that was an incredible performance. And like you say, with the amount of time that you travel and the amount of time that you've got to train to do that, finishing third is nothing to scoff at. Do you feel like you've got unfinished business that you know you can go better? And obviously you want to go better, being as competitive as you do. Is that what keeps driving you? Just saying you've got to find how you can get to that top step.
Yeah. 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 I want to do better. I'm up against some really, really strong athletes. And I think this year, Kona, as the pro field, but especially age group 35, 39 is going to be crazy, because I know definitely two guys who's coming, and it's going to be hard. But yeah, it drives me. I want to do better. So I'm actually where I've been improved a lot is my run, and I'm still waiting for that run to prove, you know. So if I can nail that run, I will put maximum pressure on all the guys. If I qualify, I need to qualify first in Keynes in a couple of weeks. But yeah, it drives me. I want to do better. And the good thing is, of course, we can do this for many years. So I hope, and the one day I could stand on the top of the podium. But let's see. It's tough.
You talk about the age group that you're in and how tough it is. It doesn't get easier. I mean, you look at the age groups ahead of you, and that some of the times that those guys are doing, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's really, really impressive. These guys who can push it. But it's good news for all of us, you know, that we can continue getting stronger and better or more clever. I think there's a lot of people telling me that if I was maybe slowing down a little bit on the bike, then I could get a better run. But and that's maybe true, but I don't think, you know, I've already got the third and I will never stop my approach. And my approach is pretty simple. It's surviving the swim, and then it's 110% within the level that I know I can do on the bike. And then I just hope that people try to follow me on the bike, and hopefully they will blow up, and then I'll hit that run, and it will always be my approach.
And then suffer and hang on. That's what it means.
Yeah, exactly. All about that.
Jacob, it's been awesome catching up. Thank you so much for your time here on the Cone Edge. I look forward to talking about the individual disciplines and the things that you've done to get better, but we'll save that for next time. Thanks for your time today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Cone Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.